case number 20-1552, EPAS Inc. versus National Quality Assurance USA Inc. Oral argument not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Mr. David Zack, for the appellant, you may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, the overarching question considered by the trial court below was whether NQA, which was the licensee of the EQM software, whether it was entitled to stop paying subscription fees under the master subscription agreement, or the MSA. Those fees were due before the start of the third quarter of 2014, that is, by June 30th of 2014. The district court made a number of legal errors when it concluded that NQA could not only stop paying, but also get the source code and then develop it on its own. Any one of those legal errors requires reversal. First, the district court erred in failing to apply the MSA's 3-day notice and an opportunity to cure provision of the MSA, which is in 11.3. Under Michigan law, a party to a contract cannot invoke that first breach rule unless it complies with the contractual notice provisions. Those two letters from Martin Dresser don't do it. The first one was sent on July 2nd, 2014. And here the timeline is important because the subscription fees were due to be paid June 30th of 2014. And then the first letter from Mr. Dresser doesn't come until July 2nd. And if you were to look at that first letter that Mr. Martin Dresser sent, it's a formal letter. It's not even talking about the right contract. It's talking about this unsigned software license agreement, or SLA, which preceded the MSA. And it's making demands that are well beyond what's required in the MSA. For instance, Mr. Dresser was demanding that JDM turn over its source code in the software, which was not required at that point. The second letter from Mr. Dresser comes on July 15th, and this also doesn't do it. It's well after NQA's payment was due. Another legal error that the district court made its determination below was that it did not consider whether any breach by JDM was material at the time that NQA's third quarter payment was due on June 30th of 2014. The big issue that was discussed by the district court was this email invoicing issue, which it lasted 79 hours, but it had been resolved by the time that performance from...
But counsel, didn't NQA resolve that invoicing issue itself? In other words, it's not like your client performed. They went out and found a way to solve their own problem, but I don't know how that works in your favor.
Well, they did... engage Willie Mallison, who was a former, I guess we use the term Enterprises to describe the earlier company. He was an employee of Enterprises. They engaged him to help with the issue, and he worked with Janian, which was using Guy Metz. He was a former officer at Enterprises. Guy Metz was working to fix the issue, and Mr. Metz and Mr. Allison worked on it together, and it was a joint effort. And although certainly NQA did engage Allison to help with it, the fact of the matter is that it was resolved in 79 hours, and the MSA provides for a formula to compensate NQA for the 79 hours of downtime. So it's not as if there's no remedy for NQA in this situation. It's a situation that was explicitly called for in the MSA, explicitly anticipated. And when, you know, there's an issue having to do with performance that's, you know, specifically addressed and anticipated, and there's an exclusive remedy, then that's not the kind of thing that a party can invoke as a material breach that suspends, you know, the other party's performance, you know, in this case, payment obligations by NQA.
If I could interrupt for a second, my understanding was that a rationale given by the district court was that Jadian failed to provide any evidence of damages, and that alone would be enough on your claim of breach of contract to grant summary judgment to NQA. Could you address that?
Yes. Well, you know, in a separate part of the opinion below, you know, this is after the discovery had closed, I think maybe 2 or 3 months after discovery, and it was shortly before the first scheduled trial date, NQA filed a motion to exclude evidence of, I'd have to look and see exactly how they phrased it, but subscription fees, or I think really anything beyond what was disclosed in the initial disclosures. So in response, since this is the first time that was ever mentioned, we responded with a supplemental damages disclosure, just giving exactly what we meant by subscription fees. It's pretty spelled out in the MSA, you know, what NQA's fees are. So part of the appeal here is that the district court abuses discretion in excluding damages, but I think even if the court were to sustain that aspect of it, it was still adequately disclosed whatever was invoiced at the time and thereafter to NQA, and that's something that in those damages, you know, would be recoverable. This really has to do with the supplemental.
So on summary judgment, you need to provide some evidence of damages. And what is the evidence, just briefly, what is the evidence of damages? Do you have a dollar amount and a document that you can point us to?
Yes, Your Honor. It's the failure to pay subscription fees from 2014, until the present, since they're still using the software. There's an EQM subscription form that's attached to the MSA. It's in the appendix. If you look to page 311 in the appendix, and in elsewhere in the MSA, it states that it's fees are charged by based on audit dates. So it's basically, to simplify it, it's essentially $5 per audit day. And audit days is something that changes, really increases every year, at NQA. And so you just take that number and you times it by five. Okay. And that's the subscription fee that they should have been paying. That's their damages.
But counsel, I think the problem here is that the district court said that you failed to prove damages, made a finding that you failed to prove damages either under your original theory or under your supplemental theory. And then your opponent pointed that out in the appellee brief. You didn't contest that finding in your opening brief. Your opponent pointed that out in the appellee brief, and you don't respond to it even in your reply brief. So if that's an essential element of your claim, I just wonder if you're done.
No, Your Honor. Certainly, did incur damage, and I think we've been stating throughout the brief that they didn't pay subscription fees. That's what this case is about, failing to pay subscription fees from 2014. They actually really haven't paid a single cent for subscription fees since the acquisition, and they've been using the software since. So this case is about subscription fees, and that's the damages that Jadine is seeking to recover in this case.
Is it enough to say this is the category of damages that we want, or do you have to have proof of the dollar amount of damages?
Well, I mean, the dollar amount of damages is the number of audit days times five. Kevin Beard, the president of NQA, was, you know, he testified at trial. He was asked the question, how many audit days, you know, did NQA have, and he testified to it. There's direct evidence. It's in the record.
What is the evidence? Sorry, the technology is hard. You say it's the number of audit days times $5. So how many audit days are there in the evidence?
Well, for 2014, they said, you know, they anticipated, projected 10,000. For 18, Mr. Beard testified that there was 26,000, and he says it goes up by, I think, 15%, you know, per year. So, you know, you times that by five, and that's for that given year. I mean, they're still using the software today, so, you know, it's...
Counsel, there's some discussion in a document, though, about something like $4.6 million for the cost of developing source code. Is that also part of your damages, or is that abandoned now?
Well, that the development, I mean, you know, when we, you know, until the court issued its initial, you know, summary judgment opinion, there were competing arguments from both sides as to which contract even applied. NQA was adamantly, you know, there's also a Trade Secrets Act claim in play, and then NQA was arguing that the software license agreement was applying. So, yeah, we're not seeking, in terms of development costs, what we understand that would refer to as bulk time, you know, to be specific. We laid that out in that, just to clarify, in that supplemental damages disclosure after it was first raised to our attention that they, you know, needed more detail. You know, the development damages refers to bulk time, and by bulk time, that's the work that CABEM, the subsequent, you know, contractor to do the development work, you know, that they paid to CABEM after they got the after NQA got the source code, and they paid a third party contractor to develop it.
I see your time is up, but you have your rebuttal time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Bauer?
Mute. Unmute. And the button, there we go.
I apologize, Your Honor. May it please the court, I'm John Bauer, counsel on behalf of National Quality Assurance. As far as the court has begun talking about damages, I'll go there as well. First of all, it is correct that the trial court held that Jadian did not attempt to prove its damages under its first damages theory, the damages theory that it disclosed in its April 16, 2018 initial disclosures. It only attempted to present evidence and was permitted to present evidence concerning its second damages theory. The court subsequently held that it would not consider the second damages theory because the second damages theory was belatedly disclosed, and under this court's decision in Howe v. Akron, it was unjustifiable, that there was no excuse, and that it was prejudicial to NQA that there be this late disclosure. But it is exactly correct, as Judge Larson pointed out, that the judge also found, Judge Zonker also found, that even if the court had permitted the second damages theory to be considered, the court still would have found that that JDN had failed to prove its damages. It had failed to establish damages. It's worth pointing out exactly what the differences between these two disclosures is to understand why the judge said, in light of the factors considered in Howe versus City of Akron, the second damages theory shouldn't be considered. The first disclosure asked for $473,000 in invoices. Only a portion of that $473,000 is attributable to subscription fees. The first damages disclosure also included $4.7 million in developing source code and $370,000 of additional fees. We moved in limine to exclude evidence of the cost of developing source code because we have no idea where the 4.7 came from. They never produced anything indicating what the basis of that was. No, there was no evidence. And the same with the license fees. In response to that, quite on the eve of when trial was initially scheduled, JDN served a supplemental. Here's the supplemental. It asked for not what was in these invoices, which was, again, $473,000. Instead, what it asked for was a new theory. It was subscription fees due under the MSA, which it estimated were between $2.8 and $3.4 million. So the subscription fee demand went up from somewhere well below $473,000 to somewhere between $2.8 and $3.4 million. We never did find out, even at trial, where those numbers come from. And the reason we don't know where they came from is because there was no evidence as to number of audit days, except for 1 year that Mr. Beard testified to. We don't know the number of audit days. We don't even know exactly how that number was calculated. Because there was no opportunity to take discovery, since the disclosure came after the close of discovery, after summary judgment was decided, we never had the opportunity to take depositions. We got absolutely no documents. And for those reasons, the court said, under Howe, there's surprise to NQA. The surprise couldn't be cured. It was clearly important since the damages went up from some less than $400,000 to somewhere up as high as $3.4 million. And most importantly, there never was an explanation. And there still isn't an explanation as to why the second disclosure came up as late as it did. Obviously, we believe that the court should affirm that portion of the district court's opinion. But we also believe the court should affirm the district court's opinion that JDN that JDN committed the first substantial breach, and therefore there was no error in the court's holding in favor of NQA on JDN's breach of contract claims because it committed the first substantial breach. And to be clear, the first substantial breach, as found by Judge Jonker, was not the invoicing problem, which Your Honor was completely correct, was not fixed by JDN, but rather was fixed by Bill Allison, who NQA engaged at its own expense. The breach, the substantial breach, was not only the failure to provide support, but the lack of capacity to file support. The evidence at trial, as found by Judge Jonker, is that there were two persons capable of providing the EQM support that was necessary to make this software work, Mr. Allison and Mr. Nagel. Sean Pasley, the really primary witness for JDN, whom the court found to be repeatedly not credible, Mr. Pasley did not even meet with those two individuals, the two people capable of providing support, until literally the day before the acquisition closed. They weren't hired. There was no training of employees of EPAS, JDN's parent, to provide support. So the problem was not simply that one instance. The problem was JDN lacked the capacity to provide support, and that never changed. And that is demonstrated by the fact that not only was there one problem, the invoicing problem, a problem that was substantial, but there were other problems. And they are reported in the opinion and at trial. For example, Mr. Theobald asked for what's called a view. He needed some data in order to attend a board presentation. JDN couldn't do that. There was a problem with this direct that was reported in this directory, in essence, made it possible for people to determine who had received certifications and who had not. That issue was never fixed. The court accepted Mr. Theobald's testimony that with respect to every support issue that it brought to the attention of JDN, JDN was unable to provide a fix.
I understand your argument that Judge Junker was right about the first substantial breach, but what about your client's continued use of the software? Was that a waiver of the first breach rule, and why not?
No, it was not a waiver. In part, it was not a waiver because JDN, NQA began using, NQA throughout most of this period, NQA continued to use the EQM software because it was permitted to do so by the escrow agreement. The escrow agreement, which was created for exactly this purpose, and it's what happens in a typical software context, where the software company breaches the agreement, or the software company goes out of business, the parties have an escrow agreement. The escrow agreement permits the user to continue using the software and to get access to the source code so you can make changes to the source code to improve its performance. And that's what's happened here. And the use of the software of EQM was largely because it was authorized to do so. There also was no waiver, and for even for a very brief period.
Sorry, the technology is hard, but isn't there a certain sense of unfairness if you're continuing to use the technology, not paying for the use of that technology?
There is no unfairness, Your Honor, because that's exactly what the escrow agreement provides. There's nothing in the escrow agreement that provides that payment is required, and nor should it be. JDN had gone out of business, NQA would be permitted to get access to the source code and continue using the software pursuant to the terms of the escrow agreement. So there is no unfairness there. And this is an escrow agreement to which JDN's predecessor agreed, in which JDN acquired the contract. I would also say one other thing that's important to sort of keep in mind, and that is the MSA, in the MSA, I would agree that in the MSA, JDN gave NQA a license to use the software, but it also promised to provide support. There's nothing in that contract that determines how much of the subscription fee is to be used for support and how much of it is to be attributed to use of the software. In fact, the software is almost unusable without support. So what JDN is attempting to say, the argument that it's making, and Your Honor, this probably is consistent with what you're calling fairness, is what they're suggesting is that they're entitled to be paid the full subscription fee, even though they're not going to provide any support. Subscription fees were payable only if support was provided. Support wasn't provided, terminated the agreement, went and got access to the source code and continued use of the software pursuant to the escrow agreement.
Is there a particular statement in the MSA that says subscription fees are payable only if support is provided, and if so, what is that provision? Where can we find it?
All I would say is the support is required in the contract itself. And what it simply says is that, and it's in section 3.1 of the MSA, it requires that support be provided. And that is such an essential feature of the contract that it was the failure to provide support that Judge Jogner found to be the substantial breach of the MSA. The court specifically found and accepted the testimony of Mr. Theobald that this software needed to be fixed every day, that it crashed routinely and it needed to be fixed. That support was such an essential feature of the contract that without support, it would have been, they would not have been able to use that software. So there's nothing in the agreement that states that JDN can stop providing support and yet continue to receive subscription fees. And once the escrow agreement permitted the use of the software, there's no requirement to pay.
So did JDN even raise this argument, this argument that you waived the material breach by continuing to rely? They didn't raise that until after trial anyway.
Well,
is that correct or is that wrong?
I think that's correct, Your Honor. What I would specifically say, because I think, you know, it's sort of weird to say that they waived the waiver arguments, but I think that's exactly correct. They also made the new argument that the escrow agreement somehow incorporates by reference the MSA, and specifically incorporates by reference the payment requirement in the MSA. That too is a new argument that JDN did not raise before trial, only raised after trial, and that argument should therefore be waived. Without much time, I will just sort of mention very quickly that the court also found in favor of NQA on NQA's counterclaim that JDN promised to deliver these three projects for which NQA had paid enterprises, and JDN promised to deliver those and never did. The court relied heavily upon Antiphon versus LEP Transport for the simple doctrine that when the acquirer promises to perform, it's assuming the obligation, and that's what happened here. JDN assumed the obligation to deliver the projects, failed to do so, and that was a breach for which NQA is entitled to damages. I see I have no additional time. Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Zack.
Yes, Your Honors. I'd like to focus on that issue of the implications of NQA's continued use of the software. It continued to use, it never stopped using the software. It continued to use the software even after it defaulted on its payment obligations, and well before it even requested the source code from Iron Mountain. It never even formally, there's really no document that NQA can point to that even suggests a formal, you know, termination of the MSA. If you read those two formal letters from Mr. Dresser closely, none of them purport to actually terminate the MSA. So they continue to use it. And there's nothing in the MSA that says that they're allowed to use it without paying. In fact, the MSA provides for exclusive remedies, it's exclusive remedy for any kind of defects in performance is it's a credit, and there's a formula. It credits NQA for the number of hours of downtime. Now, as far as the the issues that you know, with this, with the servicing issues, there's the, you know, the email invoicing issue, which resulted in 79 hours of downtime. But you know, the other two issues that were discussed, this, you know, request for a financial view, that's not a core functionality of the, it's a non-standard functionality of EQM.
But I'll take this opportunity. I'd just like to go back to this damages question. So the district court did find, first, on your first damages theory, a total failure of proof on the disclosed damages theory. Then it said you couldn't provide, it wouldn't consider your second damages theory. But then the district court said, even if the theory that was presented at trial is considered, that your client had, quote, not established those damages by a preponderance of the evidence. So I keep coming back to, isn't damages an essential element of your claim? The district court found there was a a failure of proof. You hadn't proved damages by a preponderance of the evidence. And so I'm just wondering whether we need to consider any of these other issues with respect to that claim. I understand they're the counterclaims, but or if it's just, because you didn't challenge that. You didn't say the district court erred by saying we hadn't proved these damages by a preponderance. You don't raise that on appeal. And your opponent pointed it out.
I want to be clear that we are, that's a principal, you know, issue on appeal is our, you know, the, you know, maybe if something was inartfully worded, that's a principal issue on appeal, and you know, the initial disclosures refers to unpaid invoices that you know, in going into trial, the district court, you know, found, you know, on its summary judgment opinion that we established the elements of our, you know, at least there's a colorable claim of damages. Our initial disclosures lists license fees and discuss unpaid invoices. The unpaid invoices include subscription fees. You know, that's a big part of it. And at least to be, if the court reverses, then I think that's subscription fees is the damages claim. That was well established in the evidence.
Thank you. Your time is up. Any further questions from anyone? No? Okay. We appreciate both of your arguments, and the case will be submitted, and the clerk will recess court.